And I said to me, being the ambitious young man that I was and figuring I got nothing to lose, you know, if John would ever like to come up to the radio station, we'd love to have him, you know, certainly to promote the new album or whatever. Because in my head, A, I was thinking no Beatle had ever visited WNEW-FM.
And that is how it all began for Dennis Elsess and his request to interview John Lennon. How cool is that? 1974, he's outside the recording studio. He asked May Pang, who was with John Lennon at the time, if John wanted to come up to the studio at WNEW in New York, he would always be more than welcome. Dennis Elsess will tell us that story and so much more in just a few minutes. Welcome to Rock Conversations. I'm Rob Bob, the self-proclaimed patriarch of rock and roll. Good to have you listening. And if you would, please remember to give us a rating if you like what you hear. And as I say, even if you don't like what you hear, you can give us a rating. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, and just about any other place where you get your podcasts. In talking with Dennis Elsess, we did our interview on a Saturday afternoon just a while back. And I'm willing to bet that there was an interview he did on a Saturday afternoon in 1974, a rainy Saturday afternoon in New York City, that might have been just a slightly bigger interview for him. Can you imagine what it would be like to be sitting across from one of the four Beatles? He tells that story, but it's not limited. He's got 50 years. He celebrates 50 years in rock and roll radio in New York City on July 11th. He'll share many of his great stories in addition to that incredible John Lennon interview as we get to our Rock Conversations with Dennis Elsess.
Oh, let's go back, let's go back, let's go back again.
50 years in any occupation is a milestone these days. To last 50 years in radio, which churns and burns, is almost unheard of. On July 11th, Dennis Elsess will celebrate 50 years in the biggest market, New York City. A fixture of New York City radio, he joins us now. Good to talk to you.
Great to talk to you. Great to meet you, in fact.
Likewise. Bob Stroud in Chicago has been in Chicago radio for about 42 years. So I asked him the same question. What is the secret to your success? How do you attribute this longevity in such a volatile industry? And you're going strongly today.
Oh, well, I don't think there's a secret of success. I think it's, good fortune. And there's a quote about luck having to do with patience, meeting opportunity, meeting skill. I'm glad that I got in doing this at a relatively young age, and I'm glad that I've been able to keep doing it despite all the changes year to year in radio. Certainly a lot different than it was 50 years ago.
Well, that would be an understatement. We should point out that Dennis spent a little more than 25 years at the iconic WNEW in New York, and now you've been at WFUV for 20 plus. Is it coming up on 21 or 22 yet?
Yeah, it'll be coming up on my 21st, which is hard for me to believe.
But that's good. That's pretty cool when you think of it.
That is good. And then in 2004, adding Sirius to the mix.
That's right. Yeah, which you still do today.
And I still do. And then in 4 years ago, adding the Beatles program on the Sirius channel to the mix. So I find myself with three jobs and on the radio 7.5 days a week, which is just fine with me.
Absolutely. Let's start, as I want to finish as well, and put so much other content in between. But let's talk about John Lennon. Your John Lennon interview at WNEW in 1974, I think, is one of the premier John Lennon interviews, certainly from a radio standpoint. I'd like to touch upon it now and then kind of wrap up with it toward the end of the interview. So let's start here. And how did it all come together?
You know, it's a good story. I was music director of WNEW in those days, not just on air. And as music director, I got to meet a lot of people. And the promo guy from Capitol said to me, you know, Lennon on Capitol, the promo guy said to me, if you can get to to the studios where he's recording Record Plant, which is where he was recording the album. If you can get there today around 7:30, I don't know that you'll meet John Lennon, but I will, I'll get you into at least the room where you could look into the studio. You can sit in on the session. Well, that was all I needed to hear, you know. Let me go. I'll be there in a minute. So I got there 7:30, and I did exactly that. I wasn't sitting in the physical studio where John was recording, but they were putting the finishing touches on Walls and Bridges. And I was, you know, I was amazed. I was like, oh my God, it's really John Lennon. It's really one of the Beatles. Here's the man that I was taping off the Ed Sullivan Show. When I say taping, obviously that's audio taping, just 10 years earlier. And there he is in the flesh. And, you know, it was one of those mucho pinch myself moments. And when the session was over, I was brought outside. And those were the days when John was with May Pang. And she was very lovely and chatty. And I shook John's hand and niceties. Who knows?
Sure. Yep.
What he knew, didn't know, you know, didn't expect. Oh, Dennis, nice to meet you. And I said to May, being the ambitious young man that I was and figuring I got nothing to lose, you know, if John would ever like to come up to the radio station, we'd love to have him. And, you know, certainly to promote the new album or whatever, because in my head, I was thinking no Beatle had ever visited WNEW-FM, which in hindsight, was a little surprising because everybody was visiting WNEW-FM. Elton John and Jerry Garcia and Robert Plant and Pete Townsend and all those folks had been frequent visitors to FUV. And she said, okay, you know, I'll look into it. So when the phone rings, you know, so many days or weeks later, it gets a little hazy. And May says, yeah, John's up for it. When would you like him? And I being, you know, thinking on my feet, I'm joking about it, knowing that I'm on the air Saturdays and Sundays, 2 to 6, 12 to 4. I go, how's Saturday at 4? And she goes, let me get back to you. And so that's how the interview happened. In those days, FM was so cool, we didn't promote anything. Plus, what was I going to say at 2 o'clock? Stay tuned. John Lennon will be here because, you know, what's the likelihood of him actually being on the radio? And I just kept saying, make sure you're listening later. In fact, you should call your friends. I've got a great surprise for you. I can't tell you exactly what it is, but it's a great surprise. So they, you know, they know to find Jose, and Jose will call me on the hotline. That's the dedicated line in the studio. And he says, you have guests here. And I go, okay, I'll be right down. And I've got to need to kill some time, which in those days is not that difficult. There are long records to play. And the one that's easy to play and also quite pleasant on the ears is the Suite from Chicago 2, Ballet for a Girl in Buchanan, which aside from being a great suite, contains Color My World and Make Me Smile. So it's the perfect record to and in fact, when the interview starts, the song Make Me Smile is fading out because that's how we've timed it out.
Chicago and the Ballet for a Girl in Buchanan. Now, I've been talking about I don't like to do this. I'd like to have told you all afternoon what was going to happen, but now that it's going to happen, why don't you just say hello?
Surprise, surprise. It's Dr. Winston O'Boogie at your service. I am Dennis's surprise, actually.
And he didn't come out of a cake or anything like that. John Lennon is with us, and we'll spend some time this afternoon to talk about the new album.
And John and I sitting across two turntables talking. And everything that happened that afternoon is just as it was. So if John started to tell me a story, which he does, I had to say to him, hold it for the air, and know to pick out the next record. So I had queued it up ahead of time.
When you mentioned to May outside the studio, hey, if you ever want to come up and promote the new album, we'd love to have you. And you got the call and she said, yes, we'll do it. What chance did you think there would be that they would actually show? There had to be a little doubt in your mind, as you alluded to.
A little doubt.
Yeah, that, you know,
I mean, you
they
know,
might
but,
forget. They might find something different to do.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, she was good. She took care of him. She was responsible. She was lovely. She still is lovely to this day. You know, she's an acquaintance. And yeah,
I love it. We'll pick up on the interview itself later in our discussion here.
Okay.
But let's talk a little bit more about WNEW. You mentioned that you were hired by one of the individuals you grew up listening to, Scott Muni.
Absolutely.
I think you once referred to him as the heart and soul of the place.
He really, you know, Scott, beginning with that voice.
Hi, this is Scott Muni, and welcome to the 20 years of WNEW-FM. For the next 4 hours, we'll be reliving some of the highlights of our two decades as New York's premier rock radio station.
And yes, he is one of those people that I grew up listening to. I speak very proudly of that group of men that really influenced me. And I say men because there were no women on the air. You know, Allison Steele, who I worked with at WNEW-FM, she was the one woman who ultimately broke through whatever that glass ceiling was. But I'm growing up, I'm listening to WABC, WINS, and WMCA. Those are the three big AM radio stations in New York. Briefly, there was another station called WMGM. And whether it was Scott Muni or Bruce Morrow or Dan Ingram or Bob Lewis or Harry Harrison or Murray the K.
Murray the K, yeah.
All of those people I'm listening to, and they're all seeping into my consciousness. And whatever style I create, even though it's FM, is a synthesis of all of that. All those things are, you know, I said to Bruce Morrow one day, I said, you know, you're one of those voices, you know, and he said, which one's the loudest? which is typical Bruce, who's magnificent. Even at whatever age he is, he's still terrific. But WNEW-FM was the leading rock station in New York, arguably the best or one of the best in the country. We didn't invent progressive rock or FM rock. And whether you go to San Francisco and hear the story of Tom Donahue or another story of BCN in Boston or the Chicago radio stations, everybody was coming together at the same time. And
I want to ask one other question about Scott Muni. I think just one more. There may be another one that comes up later. Is it true he got a call from someone who had taken some hostages? Do you remember that story?
Oh, yeah. It's a very famous story. People confuse it with Dog Day Afternoon, but the two are totally unrelated.
Okay.
They both happened in the 70s. But those were the days where people would go into a bank and take hostages. And they had a gun, take hostages, and threaten they were going to kill the hostages. And luckily nothing happened, but he decided to call Scott Muni live on the radio. And
I'm only making light of it, you know, years later.
No. His name is Cat Olson. And I recently spoke to a detective from the New York City Police Department who is going to do something with that in terms of talking about hostage negotiation. So it was, you know, I was there because as music director, I was there, you know, I was there in the afternoon. And so I came in the studio as it was unfolding. In fact, when Scott leaves to go down to the bank, which is downtown, I take over on the air for him. It's bizarre. I'm sure that there's a couple of documentaries and perhaps this one that's being made floating around out there. Cat Olson.
You don't think of progressive FM radio and hostage situations in the same sentence too often, but it is New York and it was the 70s, I think.
Yeah.
So
And Kat said, would you play some Grateful Dead?
We're talking with Dennis Elsis, 50 years in New York radio, celebrating that milestone on July 11th, 2021. You can still hear him these days on both Sirius XM and on WFUV, 2 to 6 in the afternoon. Is that correct?
2 to 6 streaming wherever streaming you're online. Streamed.
Yeah.
And we have a wonderful app, the WFUV app. So you can, you know, just like we can these days wonderfully with radio, you just carry us around in the middle of wherever you might be. And of course, if you're in the tri-state area, conventionally 90.7.
Yeah, we don't have to call up our buddies in other cities and say, hey, can you record this DJ for me? I'm kind of a nerd. Or I used to do that when friends were going on trips to bigger cities. I said, okay, you got to check out this station. In fact, you know, we're talking about a little bit about Annie W. and Scott Muni in college. I met some guy from New York and he was telling me, oh, WNEW, you got to check it out. I said, well, I can't really check it out on, you know, the radio we had back in the 80s. I said, why don't I give you this blank cassette tape? And when you go home on fall break, you record it. And he did. And he did. You mentioned how WNEW was such a destination for rock musicians. And there, you know, you talk about a great year for you and the station. 1974, I think it was the day, humor me here, our listeners, you don't see this, but I have to put my cheater specs on once in a while. I think it was November 29th, 1974, which was the day before Thanksgiving, and Elton John co-hosted with you a day before what I would argue became really a legendary concert.
Actually, the day after.
He came in the day after.
The day after.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
So you knew by then what had transpired.
Well, this is what was strange about that. As I said to you, I often filled in for Scott. And Thanksgiving and the day after Thanksgiving were typical fill-in days. I was on the radio in many different, you know, I had my regular weekend shifts, but I filled in all the time. So Elton was actually scheduled to come in on Friday of that week. Scott used to do something called Things from England on Friday at 4, and it was specifically playing imports and new things from England, and thought it would be fun to have Elton co-host. And Elton was really, in those days, up to be EJ the DJ, and had been at the radio station that actually earlier that week and had agreed to come up. So Elton John was scheduled to be a guest at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the day after Elton John performed with John Lennon. And so I had the exclusive. You know, those are the days, this sounds so, oh my God, but it's true. There's no internet. You know, the tribal drums only beat through people telling people, telling people. The 11 o'clock news did not show up at the Garden that day. They wouldn't have just been covering a concert. The morning newspapers probably had no information about that. And even if they had gotten the story, it wasn't as big a story then. I mean, in hindsight, it was. But basically, if I say to you that I'm sure that more than half my audience had no idea that had happened.
Had you gone to the show? Were you present at
the
show?
No. I had, you know, done Scott's show 2 to 6 and then joined my family or friends for Thanksgiving dinner. That was.
So when did you learn that Lennon had performed?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if somebody called me. I mean, obviously by 4 o'clock, 2 o'clock when I went on the air that day, I knew something had happened. But we didn't have the details. We didn't know he played Lucy. We didn't know he played whatever gets you through the night. You know,
that was the basis of it, right? There was a bet.
There was a bet.
He played
there was
backup
a bet
on
where just a few months earlier, in fact, when Lennon was recording that album that he came up to promote on my show, Walls and Bridges, he said to Elton, would you work with me on this song, which turned out to be Whatever Gets You Through the Night? And Elton said, I will. And then when it goes to number one, you have to promise to come on stage with me. And John Lennon figured, well, that's never going to happen. And anyway, he had to pay off the bet. So my opening line to Elton is, I hear you had a guest last night.
And I think our mic is on if you want.
Oh, good afternoon. Yeah. It's the four-eyed bitches back, as Rolling Stone would say. This is Elton John. Very hungover, I might add. Been up 2 hours, but
You worked last night.
Right. It was a magic evening.
All right.
For me, anyway.
John Lennon was a surprise guest last night.
Yeah.
And performed several numbers with you.
And off we go. And so, again, I have this remarkable, you know, it's like the old Walter Cronkite TV show. You are there. I have this wonderful first person story. And I'm sure that's the only first-person story that day, because I don't know that Elton did any other radio interviews. There was no Entertainment Tonight or Access Hollywood, so that wasn't happening. Telling me the story. You know, like you would tell somebody a story about what happened yesterday at 9 o'clock. It was great.
You see, yesterday, I think I played tennis. I had lunch. It's not like a Beatle joined me on stage to play on Thanksgiving night at Madison Square Garden.
And the funny thing is, I was always well aware of how historic my John Lennon interview would, you know, had become through the years. Obviously, once John died, all interviews with John took on extra meaning, but mine was special. And I knew that. And as more and more people told me, I appreciated that. But I almost had, one day I'm going through my tapes and I went, right, Elton's telling me that story. And he's telling me that story the day after it happened, less than 24 hours after it happens. It's great. So I would send our listeners to, not right now, we're talking for a while. But
DennisElsis.com, right?
Yeah, there it is with all those other.
Absolutely. So that makes it obvious. I was going to remind people we're talking to Dennis Elsis on Rock Conversations. I think, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not a huge fan of live albums for whatever reason. I like to be there, but you know, I'm more of a studio guy.
Right.
But it started back. My dad was a CPA. And so he used to bring the family gifts on April 15th, you know, tax season's over. And he brought me an 8-track, I'm dating myself now, but an 8-track of Here and There by Elton John. And there is the half of the album from Madison Square Garden. And I've owned it on 8-track album and CD. And I don't think the 8-track and the album versions have the John Lennon tunes. I think it's only the CDs.
I think they were added later.
Okay.
I think because there were probably rights that had to be dealt with.
I suspected as much. Yeah.
There probably were rights that had
to be dealt. So when I was listening to the CD for the first time, I'm expecting all the songs to be in the same order that they were on the album. I'm like, oh, when he introduces John Lennon, you know, I knew the Lennon had played, but I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. We've got it.
Absolutely.
I digress a bit, but I mean, you know, what a great album, what a great moment. And, you know, to be able to talk to Elton, now Sir Elton, the following day was great. You've seen a lot of great concerts. I want to talk about another one. I think you saw Bruce at the Bottom Line in 1975. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was now, you know, Bruce with the first album in 1973 had begun to make an impact. And actually, WNEW-FM was slow on Bruce. WMMR in Philadelphia, WMMS in Cleveland, I'm pretty sure, and a bunch of other stations were much more initially enthusiastic. I mean, NEW played it, and Bruce was a local guy. But, you know, honesty is honesty, and history is history. And WNEW was late to the party, late for the enthusiasm. Late because I don't know that anyone on the staff had actually seen Bruce live. You know, we had heard about it. And once the Born to Run, now I'm trying to remember if it was just the single or the whole album, it got leaked. All right. And in those days, the way something got leaked was somebody sent somebody a tape. Right. There's no download. You're not going to send anybody a file. And I actually have one in the basement. I should have brought it up. You would put that recording on a tape cartridge. Tape cartridges looked like 8-track. And in order to play it on the radio, you would shove that tape cartridge into a cartridge tape machine. Same thing you do with your commercials. Anyway, that's how Born to Run kept getting played and played and played on not only our station, but other stations too. And the Bottom Line, which is still one of my favorite places, was one of my favorite places ever to see the show, together with Columbia Records, booked a solid, I guess it's 5 days of shows, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and two shows a night. And Bottom Line is a small venue. And we were broadcasting the show on that Friday night. And I went to see Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band for the first time on Wednesday night. And then I went back on Thursday night and Friday night. And, you know, Bruce fans know this and other fans have heard it. The show is amazing. The show runs forever. And Bruce and the band, imagine what you've seen in recent years, but it's 1975. It was everything that you would want it to be. And it's still still measures and rings true as one of the greatest concerts I've ever seen.
And
everyone on the staff, you know, figured it out and fell in love. And so, you know,
did you go back to the station shortly thereafter and add some Bruce tunes to the rotation?
Oh, yeah, well, again, remember too, NEW was not, there was no rotation. I should explain what
was it still kind of freeform? Did you pick what you wanted?
Yeah.
Okay.
WNEW, that wall of records behind me, you walked in, I walked in at whatever time my show was, ultimately 6 to 10 at night, beginning in 1976. You walked into the room, and unless you had planned something, you really didn't know what you were playing. And most people didn't have, I mean, maybe you thought, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this. But you just picked the records. Management, Scott being the program director, had faith in the jocks that you were going to balance your show. So instead of being told, play one from the new, play two from the recurrence, I didn't even know what, you know, we didn't know about those words. There was no rotation. It comes in later. Lee Abrams creates the Superstars format. They start putting index cards in studio. We never had Lee Abrams. PLJ, long before us, our competition, WPLJ, had a format. It crept in the 80s, very slowly, that format. And it was still fairly loose. You could still make changes. But as the 80s progressed and certainly into the 90s, things got tighter. But no, there was no, I mean, so when you say, did you add Bruce Springsteen records to the rotation? I think everybody just started wanting to play everything that was available. So
it's interesting how certain stations from that so-called progressive format evolved. I think BCN in Boston had to tighten its ship a little bit. By that, I mean, you know, they were so eclectic. Oedipus came in and brought some, you know, some structure to it, whether it was an actual playlist, I'm not sure. And same with some of the stations in LA as they kind of got on in the 70s. Yeah. And you say it took till about the 80s until it kind of hit WNEW as either an on-air personality or music director. Do you have memories of hearing a certain artist for the first time and having kind of one of those wow moments?
Hearing an artist for the first time.
You know, whether it was a music, you know, industry rep coming in saying, you got to hear this, and you put it on the turntable.
No, I mean, you know, years of loving songs that only I love and they never got played. So I couldn't tell you what is a hit. I can tell you that it pleases me, and I think it'll please people who generally like the music that I picked in those days. But I was mentioning like Dire Straits, Sultans of Swing.
Oh, yeah.
Or Counting Crows, Mr. Jones. And those are the kinds of songs that you play and you hear them, and then they just pop right out of the radio, you know. But I'm not necessarily, you know, the biggest Counting Crows fan. They just put out a new record, which we're playing on WFUV. And certainly I love Mark Knopfler's work, but, you know, it's not like either one of those bands are my go-to band. So long story, very long-winded answer. No.
You've had the opportunity, as we've stressed repeatedly, to interview so many artists, rock musicians, band members, most of whom have seemed to have been very good interviews. You have one or two that stand out as either frustrating or maybe an interview that got away from you?
No, you know, people always say to me, and is there some person that was an a-hole? You know, is there somebody who just wasn't? I've really run into I can't really, you know, I remember Ian Anderson, the day he came up, was rough to talk to. He wasn't easy. And he had done Howard Stern at the K-Rock earlier in the morning. And I don't know that he had had the smoothest time. I was getting him in the afternoon. I don't know that interview. And so Ian wasn't in the best mood. Eric Burdon told me a funny story. I interviewed Eric Burdon at WFUV, not that well, years ago, but everything is kind of hazy exactly what year. And again, that's on my website also. And he was terrific. And we talked primarily because with all these people, you must talk about their current project. That is why they're there. Always start with their current project.
Oh, it makes sense, right? Yeah.
Always start with their current project. If they feel comfortable with you, and if they feel good about promoting without being, you know, then if you want to get in that question about that great classic song, do it later. You have a much better chance. So anyway, I'm talking with Eric Burdon, and we're chatting, and I say, you know, I interviewed you in whatever year it was at WNEW. The band had gotten together. It was a brief reunion. And he said, oh, yeah. He said, that was a horrible time. He said, we were fighting with one another. He said, what, did I behave myself that day? I said, yeah, you were great. He said, oh, we just, it was funny in hindsight, but I couldn't pick it up that day. No, I've been very fortunate. But the very long answer to your question is I don't have any great stories about somebody being a jerk.
That's fantastic in a way. Yeah,
it is. It is. You know, I'd like to say it's because I'm a good interviewer, and I make people have told me that I make people comfortable, and I think I generally do.
And well, I think that's a huge part of it. Like you say, being prepared, you know, making people feel comfortable. Of course, promoting what they want to promote right away always helps. That's and there's nothing wrong with that. A couple other subjects you've interviewed I want to touch upon, and then we'll get back to the John Lennon interview. I think you did these when you were at, at your current station, WFUV. Yep. Roger Daltrey. I've always been a fan of The Who. I like Townsend a little more than Daltrey, to be fair. But yeah. Man, what a great interview. And the way he described kind of finding his voice with Pete's music.
Yeah,
I think he said Happy Jack. He thought it should be a Burl Ives tune or something like that.
Yeah. You know, I've been really fortunate to I'm in the process now of putting together a 50th anniversary show. Last year, I did a 20th anniversary show at WFUV. And I, again, would send your listeners to the website because the show is up there and they can stream it. And I spent a lot of time picking out which bites, which bits, who I wanted to have in there. And I used Roger Daltrey. And I might use him again on the 50th. I don't know. But Townsend, who's just also terrific and has a wonderful sense of humor, they both do. The Townsend interview that I did at WNEW, I will use a piece of that on this upcoming 50th anniversary, which maybe by the time this is podcasting on wherever will be in the both FUV archives and in my own. Daltrey, as charming as he sounds, as absolutely charming, tells a wonderful story. I'd read his book. He had a new book at the time. That was why he was appearing. And he talks about meeting his later-to-be wife backstage at a rock show when The Who played New York for the first time. That's the Murray the K show, the Easter show, which I attended. And when I told him that, and I said, you know, I think I saw you on the day that you could have met your wife. And, you know, he was like, well, really? What were you? So he was charming. And what you hear is what you get. And Townsend, too, terrific sense of humor. True story, I was the announcer on the Robert Klein Radio Hour. Robert Klein Radio Hour, I don't know if it must be up on the web somewhere. It must be floating around there. Robert did a weekly show for the folks at DIR Broadcasting, the same people who brought you the King Biscuit Flower Hour. It was a talk show. Imagine, you know, a modern day talk show. Robert sat, guests came up. Sometimes they stayed and talked to one another. And on any given show, we might have Gilda Radner from Saturday Night Live.
Yep.
Kiss as a new band. The cast of WKRP in Cincinnati. The picture I have with Roy Orbison happened there. Just absolutely amazing. So Townsend is the guest. All I got to do on that show was, you know, be Ed McMahon. I would, you know, here's Robert, and I would do the top 10 of the week. And so afterwards, I got to talk with Pete Townsend. And, hey, Pete, nice to meet you. My name is, I work on WNE. Oh, yeah, he said, no, I know you. I hear your show. You hear my show. And he says, yes, I have a friend in New York who makes tapes for me. And when I drive my whatever child he said to school, his son or his daughter, I listen to these cassettes, and that's where I hear your show. And I just had this great image of, you know, Pete Townsend and through going through the English countryside, hearing me on the radio. It was just it, you know.
That's pretty cool. That's really cool.
We've met a few times, and I've gotten to interview him. He's very, very gracious. And both Roger and Pete, just, you know, these are guys who understand. They understand their place in rock history. They understand what it means to meet somebody and put you at ease. You know, that's also one of the great charms and one of the great attributes of the performers I've met who are just really, really famous. They know how you're feeling, and they're going to, if they're nice, they're going to help you ease into the moment.
Well, it's a perfect segue. We're talking with Dennis Elsas, longtime DJ in New York, 50 years. On July 11th, he's at WFUV weekdays, 2 to 6. Catch that online. He's on Sirius XM, and for more than 25 years was at WNEW, where he did the famous interview in 1974 with John Lennon. So let's get back to that. Talking about putting someone at ease, I think I saw in the documentary Lennon NYC that, you know, arguably and understandably, you were a little nervous at the time. And Lennon apparently picked up on that and went with the flow.
John comes up, and I know he's there to talk about walls and bridges. And that's what I'm going to do. That's, you know, your guest is there to promote his latest project. But I want to talk about the Beatles. I'm just dying to talk about the Beatles. I'm a huge Beatle fan. I think anybody who grew up in the 60s loving the Beatles certainly initially respected all of the solo works. You know, George Harrison, All Things Must Pass. Wow. You know, and Ringo with that amazing set of singles. Wow. And Paul, as he's developing his solo career and building Wings. Again, another wow. And John Lennon. But in our heart of hearts, the Beatles are there. In our heart of hearts, just as most of the world, might they get back together? Because in 1974, it's only 4 years since they broke it up.
Yep.
You know, it's not an eternity. But anyway, I'm a big Beatles fan, but I can't quite, how am I going to get some Beatles questions in here without looking like the total Beatle nerd that I am? And now I don't want to insult John either. You know, who knows what he, you know, maybe he and Paul are having their differences. So as I mentioned to you, the show is live. And I don't know what John said off. Oh, John had brought that day an assortment of 45, some of his favorites, to show me how he was influenced by those 45s and how he copied or nicked little riffs. So that's in that interview too.
I think in the music business, they call it borrowing.
Yeah, yeah. No, but he says, you hear this, he plays this. That's sure, the beginning of Instant Karma. And this is this, and this is that. And for some reason, he talked about ska and reggae. I don't remember. We're off mic now, right? We're off mic. And he said, you know, we did that on I Call Your Name. And I said, well, maybe we'll play I Call Your Name. And he said, oh, that's fine. And I go and I'm reaching up to the Bees, the Beatle albums up there to bring it down. And it's Yesterday and Today, unless I'm confusing my songs at the moment. But, you know, that's my brain.
No, I think that's correct. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, my brain putting it together. So as I pull Yesterday and Today out of the wall, it's that famous album cover that had been pasted over. It's the Butcher cover, which Beatle fans will know. And over it, because Capitol Records was offended that they would pose in butcher suits with dead baby dolls, had been posted a very, you know, typical picture of the Beatles, as he said, you know, just sitting there looking all happy. Because the Capitol Records was scared. So as I'm pulling the record out of the wall, I just offhandedly say, gee, I wonder if we peel off the label, if the dead babies will be under there. And he says, you know how that happened, don't you? And I go, no, but this record is about to end. Save it. I'll ask you on the air. So the door has been opened. He tells the story with much love and, you know, humor. And so we're comfortable, and I'm comfortable throughout the rest of the interview, asking questions like, will they get back together? And he can see that if you listen to the interview, I go, any chance of you getting together? Ah, yes, getting together. And I asked Paul McCartney the same question 2 years later. And John's very funny. You know, he said, you know, relations are very warm, my dear, very warm. And then he makes a joke about, we might wait if we did anything for a couple of years till the royalty rates are a little more in our favor. But yes, he tells me about that. We talk about immigration, talk about his producing with Harry Nilsson, talks about how much he loves New York, which is used quite a bit in that movie, Lennon NYC. So,
but the immigration, a lot of people don't realize. I mean, the government, led by President Nixon at the time, basically wanted him out of the country mm-hmm. for a number of reasons. And this was kind of at the height of that campaign to send him back to England, or at least to get him out of the U.S. And you were able to ask him, as you noted, about immigration. Oh. How did you go? I mean, that's not the easiest topic to bring up.
Well, I think the opening question in that segment was, you know, is it easy to be a John Lennon in New York? You know, and we get into it. And then I sort of hesitate before I ask the immigration question. And he goes, no, I'll talk about it, you know, and he's quite open and clever and funny. You know, he compares himself to, he says, I don't want to come back here like Charlie Chaplin, and they wheel me out, you know, he said, and then they play Paul's song Yesterday as they introduce me, you know. So,
and even one of my favorite parts of that interview is when he, I mean, it's so lighthearted, but he read the weather forecast.
Just about 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And so I need an official station break.
Okay, this is John Lennon with Dennis on WNEW FM. And we're mucking about on a Saturday rainy afternoon because we've got you all trapped in your rooms, you see, because it's too wet to go anywhere.
We even have the 4 o'clock temperature readings.
We do? Oh, let's see how hot it is. Temperature is 68. No wonder I'm sweating.
He was, you know, we had done with Elton. Elton had been very open to it, to be the co-DJ. And so basically, with John sitting there, I just had him read the commercials and do the tags. And that's one of the, you know, one of the most fun parts of the whole interview. Also screwing up my name, that I became Dennis. He says, I'm having a hard time pronouncing your name. Socialist? That'll Dennis Schmelchus, you know, and then, anyway.
Well, Dennis Elsis, as we wrap up here, this has been great. I want to ask you, I don't think this is an unfair question, though I'm noted for asking unfair questions.
This is over. I'm leaving.
Yep. Now, never controversial, though, maybe. No, of living artists right now, mm-hmm. who in the rock and roll world have you not interviewed who would be at the top of your list?
Well, I've obviously been asked this before, right? So I have a prepared list in my head, and most of these are unobtainable. It would be fascinating to have the opportunity to talk to Bob Dylan. Though if you said you have an interview with Bob Dylan, I would really be, that would be a tough one. Fascinating challenge, but you know, clearly. Yeah. I wish I had been able to talk to George Harrison because I've interviewed the other three. So that's something I missed. Neil Young, you know, I've interviewed Crosby and I've interviewed Nash, and Neil Young, you know, that would be terrific. And then, you know, these days, you know, there are people like Dave Grohl who are doing fascinating things.
Oh, yeah. He's spectacular, isn't he?
Yeah. Even though on WFUV, we don't play that much of the Foo Fighters, and on the Classic Rock Channel and on the Classic Rock Channel and the Beatles Channel, I don't really play any of his music, you know, on Sirius, but he's, you know, he's a fascinating guy. I don't have a very long list. I'm glad I got to talk to Joni Mitchell, you know, when she was healthy and was, oh, I'll tell you somebody who I got this close to Carole King.
Hmm.
Carole King.
So what do you mean by this close? What happened?
I was in New York City and I was in a store and I went to pay for whatever it was I went to pay for. And there's this woman with frizzy hair, you know, and it was that dumb question. Did anybody ever tell you, you look just like, and she said with a smile, I am. Oh, you know, so I chatted her up and, you know, said, you know, anytime you'd like to come up and WFUV and associated with national NPR and we could do it. And I got close because I got through to her manager and, but she's very special because that's the music I grew up listening to. Not yeah. Tapestry. Tapestry comes out the year I joined the radio station. So that's the music I'm playing. But all those greatest hits. And she went to Queens College, as did Paul Simon. So I've interviewed him a bunch of times. A very nice gentleman. Good. I, very fortunate to have met so many of these people.
This has been so fascinating. I appreciate you spending the time with us. Dennis Elsess is the voice you've been hearing. He celebrates 50 years in radio in New York City on July 11th. You mentioned you're going to have a 50th anniversary special. So yes. Our listeners can look for it online. We'll throw in a link once it's posted as well. DennisElsess.com, WFUV.com.
Yeah, DennisElsess.com, WFUV.org. I'll make sure it's out there.
Sure. Wonderful.
Putting a lot of work into it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. A pleasure.